This is George Berg speaking from the General Assembly at Oklahoma City. Even presbytery business can be a basis of misunderstanding. The Reverend Geddes Orman and the Reverend Alexander Stewart of the Union Presbytery, Synod of the Mid-South, told the General Assembly of the beating they received while on presbytery business in Camden, Alabama, May 11th and 12th. This is a story as told to the General Assembly by Mr. Stewart.
Mr. Moderator, fathers and brethren, I'd like to make one quick claim to distinction while I'm before the General Assembly. I'm sure I'm not the only person to have addressed the Assembly with a broken arm. However, at this point, I am willing to claim the distinction as being the only minister to do it who bore on his cast the signature of the stated clerk, the General Assembly. We met with the commission in Camden, Alabama on the evening of May 11. That was a very successful, heartwarming, and inspiring meeting. We discovered many things about the Negro churches in Camden that we had not known until this time. We discovered a wonderful spirit of concern, of interest, of cooperation, of desire, and of need on the part of our Negro work in that section of the country. The commission meeting continued for some hours until approximately 11:30 Central Standard Time. The commission adjourned and we returned to Camden, where a minister who had traveled with us, the Reverend James Reese of Knoxville, was taken to the home of Mr. Hobbs, the Negro principal of the school in Camden. My companion and I then went to the hotel in Camden, the Wilcox County Hotel, and after ringing the night bell three times, we aroused the attendant who offered us the only accommodation he had, which was a single room with a double bed. I'd never thought of sleeping with the stated clerk of presbytery before, and I assure you I'll never do it again. The man was very gracious and apparently sincere in his desire for us to have this room. I filled out the registration form using, at his request, both names on the same card. And inadvertently, I listed a wrong license number. I'm one of these people who have a car and a half. The half car I drive by myself, and the larger car, the family car, I drive with the family or when I'm on business with other people. The only difference in the number is that one of the license numbers has a letter. The other is a number. They're identical except for that technicality. So I listed the wrong number. We went into the room, went direct to the bed, commented to one another before going to sleep what a successful day it had been, and how we ourselves had been inspired and enlightened and challenged by what we had seen on behalf of the Negro community there in Alabama. At about 3 o'clock in the morning, there was this loud pounding at the door. I was in a state of semi-consciousness, as I usually am at that time in the morning. My companion was much more alert than I and sprang to his feet. And sprung to the door. It reminds me of the story of the poem of the night before Christmas, the way it all happened. He opened the door and he saw what I had not yet seen, and that is a man standing there with what I believe was a 12-gauge shotgun. It looked like an 80-millimeter howitzer when I saw it, but at that time, I believe it was a 12-gauge shotgun and a pistol in his pocket. From this point on, I'll leave out the descriptive adjectives the man used for the sake of press relations and because we really not add anything constructive to the nature of the reason for my being present here. You men get dressed and get out of here. I heard that and aroused a little more and asked what I thought was a relatively simple question, what time is it? Then he said, turn on the light. Well, I wasn't about to turn on the light because in the first place, it just didn't occur to me that it ought to be on right at that moment. And so he said again, turn on the light. And when it was not turned on, he then said, well, I'll turn it on myself. And he proceeded to turn it on. At that point, I saw the shotgun. I got up out of bed rather willingly then. Mr. Armand already had on part of his clothes, including my undershirt. I recovered that from him and began to get dressed. And incidentally, if you see someone who quotes an old proverb to you that says all men are alike, they all put their trousers on one leg at a time, you tell them you know at least one man who says that's not true. The man began by accusing us of being there for the purpose of integration. We had come, as he said, to quote him, to stir up these niggers. We assured him that that was not the reason for our being there. This was a situation in which reason or logic did not prevail in any form. The first blow of the rifle, excuse me, of the shotgun, struck me on the jaw, quite without provocation, at least from my point of view. I was able to detect a motion of the gun before it did strike and dodged away from the blow and received a glancing blow on the jaw. The second blow I warded with my left arm in order to keep it from landing on my head. The conversation then deteriorated completely. Other accusations were made as to who we were and the nature of our business in Alabama, and the assurance in this man's judgment that he had put two and two together and gotten four, in spite of our trying to tell him that he had done it and had gotten six. He just had the wrong answer from the beginning. He hurled a number of insulting remarks to me, turned to my companion and said, this goes for you too, and hit him behind the ear, and immediately turned again to me with the third blow of the shotgun, and this one fractured my right arm. I said immediately on its occurrence, my arm is broken, and he said, before the night's over, you're going to be dead and be floating in the river. And at this point, I was beginning to think that perhaps he was right. My wife has always complained that I carry too much, as she says, junk in my pockets. In my jacket pocket, the inside jacket pocket, I had a pair of glasses, a pipe, a package of pipe cleaners, a little leather folio that I just refilled with fresh note paper, and a fountain pen. The next blow of the shotgun caught me full force across that pocket and knocked me across the foot of the bed. When I was on the bed in this position with broken arm, he began then in earnest to use the shotgun as a woodsman might use an axe or as a baseball player might use a bat. With no intent to use it at all as a gun, he gripped it by the stock end and began then to pound relentlessly with the barrel of the gun. I warded as many blows of the gun as I could with my arms and legs. One of the last blows shattered my wristwatch. The blow to my pocket broke the glasses, the pipe, and the fountain pen. The gun disintegrated in his hands. It literally came apart. He said, this doesn't make any difference, and he took his pistol from his pocket and ordered us then to pick up our luggage and get out of the room. As best we were able, we did that. Mr. Orman had been hit twice on the head. He was in good running condition, and I understand now there's to be a report that a 3-minute mile has been accomplished. I started toward the car in the direction of the car. We parted directions, this somewhat instinctively. When one person is chasing two, he can't follow both if they go different ways. So Mr. Armand went to the right, and I turned to the left of the car. He said, if you touch the car, I'll blow your brains out. So I proceeded not to touch the car very deliberately and walked on past it with my back to the man, keeping as best I could an eye on him and on his pistol. I managed to get to the corner, which is about a half block away, and as I stepped around the corner, he fired the pistol. I first thought he had fired at me. I saw or felt no indication or heard no indication of the truth of that, and then I felt that perhaps he had either fired at Mr. Orman or had fired a signal for some companions. I hid in the bushes a few minutes in case the White Citizens Council was on hand, and when nothing occurred, I continued to proceed down the street with the assurance that my right arm was broken and with the feeling that my left arm was broken and the possibility that my right leg was also broken. The only point of contact that we had in Camden was at a Negro home where we had had dinner the evening before, and I had to walk the long way to that home, 9 blocks. In the course of that experience, I recalled other experiences in hostile territory of the Second World War, where one hides from whatever that moves until he discovers whether it is friend or foe, and if he's uncertain, he stays hidden. I did hide one time during that time from an approaching car. I saw the car coming 2 blocks away and scrambled over a little hedge into a yard full of dogs. It seems that everybody down there has at least 2 hounds. They began to bark, as hounds can do, and I had a package of M&Ms and a package of Lifesavers in my pocket, which I immediately proceeded to feed those dogs. And this was a new experience both for me and for them. We both enjoyed it, and the dogs there did quit barking, and they began to pick up the bark across town, so that every dog in Camden at about 3:30 that morning was barking. We did rendezvous at the home of the principal, Mr. Hobbs. From there, we were driven in his car to the Reverend Claude Brown's home in Selma, some 42 miles away. There, I received temporary medical attention from a Dr. Maddox, who did splint my arm and give first aid medication to the bruises on my arm and other arm and legs, and gave us some medication for pain. We were driven then to Birmingham, where we boarded a plane for Knoxville, and I was met there at the airport, and Mr. Armand was taken to his home, where he later went to receive medical attention, and I was taken to the Oak Ridge Hospital, to which I was admitted and in which I spent 5 days. This is a summary of what took place at Camden. I would like again to underscore that it did not have anything to do with race, as we normally think of involvement in the race question. I'd like to summarize, if I may, something of a feeling that seems to me to be important. As a part of the church, we are a part of what we believe to be a new community. And if it were God's will that this new community should be formed in history, a community based on faith in Jesus Christ and characterized by loving service, then this community, the church, finds its reason for being in the reconciling work of Jesus Christ, and in the reconciling work of one individual, of one human being, toward another. Love so grounded is the essential contribution of true Christianity to the current struggle for human brotherhood, which goes far beyond civil rights. Without patient mercy and motivating love, which springs from our knowledge of and faith in Jesus Christ, our human society would be more disintegrated than it is now. Our weak efforts to secure full integration in the human community would even be more ineffective. It seems to me that integration is the only alternative to disintegration. The blessings of brotherhood A full integration of all men into the human community will far outweigh the burdens of brotherhood. Then and only then will we be able to recognize ourselves and all other men for what we are, brothers with a common ancestry. In Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice, he has Shylock say these words: "Hath not a Jew eyes, hath not a Jew hands, organs, dimensions, senses, affections, passions, fed with the same food, hurt with the same weapons, subject to the same disease, healed by the same means, warmed and cooled by the same winter and summer as a Christian is? If you prick us, do we not bleed? If you poison us, do we not die? Substitute the name of any race or class or color of humankind for the word Jew, and you will come out the same place. We are brothers with a common ancestry, a common calling, a common destiny." And St. Paul, in speaking at Mars Hill, said this: "He, that is God, created every race of men of one stock to inhabit the whole earth's surface. He fixed the epochs of their history and the limits of their territory. They were to seek God, and it might be touch and find him, though indeed he is not far from each one of us, for in him we live, in him we exist. We are his offspring. This is the way God intends us to live, and so help us God, we will live like that. I want to thank you for your hospitality in inviting us here, and to be proud to go home to say to my kindergarten age son, who told me when I left, because he was angry that I was going away again, well, when you get there, they'll break your other arm." Thank you.
Dr. Kenneth Nye of our Board of National Missions is going to have the final word in this presentation.
Moderator.
This is before you for your information only, and to indicate something of the difficulty in carrying on not only mission, but the ecclesiastical function of the church. The legal aspects of this thing will be carried through to the very end by the Board of National Missions.
Immediately after their report to the Assembly, Alexander Stewart and Geddes Orman appeared before a special press conference with Frank Hines as moderator.
Good question.
Yes.
This is Miss Gouldy, Fort Worth.
What happened to your car? As I understood your recital, you were driven by a Negro at the Selma and then on to Birmingham. Did you abandon your car there?
Yes, the car was left there. And the wiring was damaged. The wiring was pulled from under the dash. The wiring under the hood was also damaged, so the car would not run.
Who was the man that did the feeding? I never did understand that.
This was the man who admitted us to the hotel.
Clerk?
Yes.
Night clerk?
Yes.
I'm sorry, can you speak up, please?
The man who beat you up?
Alex, you're not really well. I'm sorry.
Yes, the man who let us have the room is the man who later came and beat us up.
Has he been arrested?
No.
Will he be?
Well, the sheriff, I think, would know about
now,
that.
The man from the Board of National Missions said they would follow the legal aspects to the end. Do you know what he meant by that?
Yes, we have consulted counsel and are in the process now of these consultations, and until they are completed, we will not know what will take place.
In your chronology, I got hazy on one point. You said you were running and you came to the corner and the man fired a pistol and you hid in some bushes. Did he fire the pistol on you and you ran away? Or what happened when he fired the pistol between him and you?
So far as I know, nothing.
He just let you go?
Yes.
Mr. Orman, did you have any contact with the law enforcement officials that night?
We did not.
Did you attempt to?
We did not. We were advised by the ones to whose home we went that it was best probably not to.
Well, have you ever made any sort of formal complaint, or has this been brought to the attention officially of the law enforcement people in Camden?
Yes, it has.
Through your counsel?
Yes.
Do you, one of you, fight back for it?
One time I did, one of the early blows of the shotgun struck my hand and I caught it by the barrel and the gun ended up in the pit of my stomach. That's the nearest I ever got to actually getting hold of the weapon or to being able to retaliate in some way. When he said let go, I was willing to let go. Well, he was a rather heavy man. He was not a tall man, not particularly tall, about Mr. Orman's build, but had much more weight in some places than Mr. Orman.
Was the doctor who treated you a Negro?
Yes, he was.
Mr. Orman, how did you get away?
What happened to you?
But when I opened the door and I saw the gun, I more or less froze in a position there. And when he said, get your clothes on, well, of course, I got my clothes on. So I was in the front. And when he said, get out of the room, we took him at his word. And we were in a room right next to the lobby of the hotel. And it was a hotel with a front porch open, no cover on the porch. And just as soon as I hit the front porch, I saw open space. And I thought the best thing to do was use it. So I just turned right and started running.
Where did you run to?
I ran right through the middle of town. It's a little town of, say, 750 or 1,000. Has a courthouse, has a business section. And I went right through the business section. But I didn't see anyone. I just sold out, and I happened to remember the turn to make to go to the Negro school. You see, we had been to the Negro school and the Negro minister's home, and the principal of the school lived next to the Negro minister, and we knew that the Negro minister that was with us was spending the night there. So this is the only place we knew where to go. So I ran there, and I was there approximately 10 minutes, I suppose, before Mr. Stewart arrived. The principal had gotten Mr. Reese up, the minister, and he'd gone over and gotten the minister up of the church there. And they were deciding what to do. And about this time, Mr. Stewart arrived at the door. And their decision was to take us to Selma. They did not ask us what we thought was best. They decided themselves, among themselves, what was best at this point.
Do you know whether they've received any threats or anything since you left?
We do not, as far as I know.
How about you? Have you received any?
No. I've only received just one anonymous call in all of it in Knoxville.
How about you, Mr. Stewart?
No, I've received none.
Roy Adams, Quick Plain Dealer. I'm a little vague on one point. You said that the firing on the car was the damage. Have you got your car back now?
Yes, the car is back.
Returned to you by some people down in this town? Or?
Yes, Mr. Reese stayed behind and had the car repaired and drove it back to Knoxville.
Mr. Reese is a Negro pastor that was accompanied by Knoxville. Yes. I see there were three pastors then.
That's right. Yes.
Also, I think, did you say that you knew this man who came to the room, that he was the one who had given you the room in the hotel?
Yes.
He worked for the hotel?
Right? Yes.
The room clerk or something?
Yes.
And a number of us are kind of wondering why, since this was about 10 or 11 or 12 days ago, there has been nothing out on the wire services at all on this. How has it been?
Oh, yes, 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 yes. It was out on the AP and UP both.
It was?
It was, yeah.
Immediately thereafter?
Yes. In fact, that night, on Wednesday morning, there was a little out because the community would not talk. And then the UP of Montgomery called the UP of Knoxville and asked them to ascertain if we were there and if what they heard was true.
Now this was the room clerk in the hotel, and everybody now knows who it is, but no action has been taken yet in this small town against this man.
That's correct.
And unless there's tremendous pressure brought to bear, it would appear to you that nothing is going to be done? unless the church can do something?
Well, that's under advisement.
Okay.
Mabel, you have a question.
Mr. Stewart, you referred to being reminded of hostilities of World War II. Are you a veteran of World War II?
Yes, I am.
Did the chaplaincy, or were you in the military service?
No, I was in the military service in the infantry.
Europe?
Yes.
How long?
4 years. 4 years.
How about you? Were you in
the service?
You were in combat then, I think.
Just very, very slightly toward the end of the war. I went in the service, and by the time my training was completed and I was stationed in Europe, I first was in the mop-up and occupational forces behind the lines. I never was actually what we say a frontline combat infantry.
Mr. Armour, do you have a military record?
I do not.
He does now. Yeah, he has a track record, too, Dr. Nye says. Dr. Nye, General Secretary of the Board of National Missions, is here, of course, too, as you see.
Dr. Nye, are you here to comment on possible legal action?
Speak up. Well, there are several alternatives. One is a criminal action. The other is a civil action. The criminal action, of course, has to be taken in the state of Alabama itself. The sheriff has been officially notified, as has been said, that the action will be taken. The other action is civil action, which can be taken in a federal court and can be initiated immediately.
Can you not institute in federal court an action, criminal action, for violation of civil rights?
I suspect so, but if we, our counsel is not clear as to the direction yet, but the opinion at the moment is that it will be a civil suit for money.
Concerning the criminal action in Alabama, if you had any conversation with the prosecuting attorney, district attorney, whatever it might be, the panel had?
Had none.
Who would the civil suit be directed by? The
legal counsel is Rip. And our
is your counsel.
Our
written.
Counsel is the Yard, the district attorney.
Who would the civil suit be against?
The owner of the hotel.
Do you know the name of the clerk who did this beating?
Only as it was reported to the papers. This is an alleged name, yes.
What is the name?
No, I don't.